Okay, fine. Befaamet,
Yeah, thank you on the question. Give God grant me patience, God grant me serenity. بعد خانم ایرانی میگه خدایا انقدر من صبر بده که شوهرم انقدر اذیت میکنه من عصبانی نشم. خدایا انقدر به من عشق بده که انقدر باز اذیت میکنه من هنوز تو فستاس باشم و خدایا به من قدرت نده ولو میزنم لو لولا.
Very nice. Fine. So there is another saying that it says we are going to be talking about what the Torah says about marriage tonight. So it says that, you know, Adam HaRishon came to Hashem with a long wish list that I want a wife, that she has this and she has that, on and on and on. So Hashem tells him, look, this is going to cost you an arm and leg. So he says, he pauses and says, what can I get for a rib? So, fine. So we go back to Genesis, to Bereshit. Maybe tonight I want to just in a few psukim from the Torah to get some messages from here. I don't think any new ideas, but the source, everything is in Bereshit. Bereshit, Genesis, is the beginning of everything. We see, you see, my Rosh Hashiva Zatzal of Weinberg, he used to say that if you want to understand what's the Torah's idea about marriage, it's good to go to the business world. He says, like in the business world, you have like in different entities, you have different like in the business units, that they could come together in different formats. You could have something that it's called a partnership. And you have two different companies, each one of them active, right? So they decide, like, you know, to work together. It's like, you know, you had the Robinson May. I don't know if you remember. I think it's Zichrono Livracha. Finished already, you know. But you see, second, you have one department store, another. They decide, like, you know, to become right to but each one of them, like, you know, keeps its own operation, but they just you know, work together, right? This is one way that right they could collaborate, like, you know, two different units together. There is another form.
Thank you very much.
Valentine's Day is next week. The question, you know, it's very interesting. Somebody, you know, there was a sunrise. You know, he called me. He said that, like, you know, people called him up. He made something about like in Valentine's Day. So he was saying, is it kosher to have something? I didn't think it was an idea, a problem. But then when I was talking to my wife, he was telling me that it is. He was saying, okay, it's like in a saint. It's some right. So the idea was, instead of that, to start something like in a Jewish, maybe like in a Tu B'Av. The Jewish Tu B'Av or Shabbat Nachamu, after Shabbat Nachamu, this is some, you know, kind of like, you know, Jewish day that could maybe make up for that. This should be good for business as well. Anyway, so we have one is, as we said, right. So one you have partnership. Then you have another way that companies, right, could work together, or like, you know, to become one, so to speak, which is a takeover. A takeover, sometimes it's a hostile takeover, sometimes it's friendly. But, you know, one company comes and swallows the other one, and it's like a boat or something, you know, sinking in an ocean, that, you know, just, you don't see it, it just disappears. It's just like, you know, it's consumed, it's like, you know, in the other one. So that's another type of, like, you know, two businesses becoming one. But then there is another fashion of, like, you know, of two different entities coming together, which is called merging together. And you see, a merger, when two companies merge together, it's not a partnership. Right, it's not like each one of them continues to operate, you know, independently, but they just coordinate their activities. It's not that, and it's not it's not a takeover. It's not like, you know, one company comes and takes over or swallows the other one. But it's rather they merge together, they become one company. Right? It's a new name, it's totally, so my Rosh Hashiva Zatzal Weinberg, he used to say that what Hashem had in mind when Hashem talks about creation of like the first marriage, which is the prototype, right? The Torah tells us, and we elaborated maybe on the first half of this pasuk, I think about the first session we had, right? The Torah says, "Al ken ya'azov ish et aviv ve'et imo." Right? I think, you know, we spoke about this. It says, right, it says Vayaperesh, right, Vayishan, Vayven, right, so it says, Al ken yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo v'davak v'ishto v'hayu lebasar echad. V'hayu lebasar echad, it means that, you know, that they become one. They become one, so Moshe used to say that, and this is like, you know, merging, becoming one. It's not a partnership that each one of them, runs its own business, and they just coordinate their activities together, and it's not a takeover either. The Torah says, "V'hayu lebasar echad." The ultimate, the goal of a Jewish marriage is "V'hayu lebasar echad," that they should become one, to create that oneness, and that oneness is in all senses. It's really in halachically, right? The Gemara says, "Ishto kegufo." Like, you would be shocked, like, you know, the Torah says, like, you know, the Talmud has a discussion, and it says, like, you know, even husband and wife, when they are together in bed, they could say Shema even. The Gemara says, because this is one, this is oneness. It's like a person has, like, you know, it's one arm, another arm. It's like, you know, one, you know, two, right? It's halachically, it's considered constantly back and forth. It's considered Ishto kegufo. Ishto kegufo, like, you know, the wife of a person. Is that the person himself? It's like his own body. It's one thing. So this is what the Torah has in mind, that, you know, the Jewish marriage should create. It's not just Jewish marriage. You should realize it's good to know that when the Talmud says that ish ve'isha zachu shechina beinahem, it says that, you know, that shechina, Hashem's presence dwells among a couple, it's not talking just about Jewish couples. It says, ish ve'isha, husband and wife. It says, you know, the ish in Hebrew has yud, and isha has hey. Right? So we have, you know, aleph, here we have, right, you know, yud, it's here, ish, isha, and ketubah. Ish, Isha, and Ketubah, so that creates Yud Kevav, it brings Hashem's Shekhinah between them. So you see the half of the first half, Yud Ke, is also the name of Hashem, right? Yud and Ke, and that's not, that's even without Ketubah, right? It's even without the Jewish Ketubah. If husband and wife, that, you know, that they live together in peace and harmony, even non-Jews, right? The Shekhinah of Hashem dwells between them. Obviously, when you have Ish, Isha, and you have Ketubah, so Ketubah also has an extra Vav and Hey, because the Shoresh, the root of Ketubah is Ktav, Kaf, Tav, right, Bet. So here, from the Shoresh, you have an extra Vav and Hey. So then Ish, Isha, and Ketubah, it's Yud Kei Vav Kei, so then you have the full name of Hashem between them. But you see, even without the Jewish marriage, without the Ketubah, even the husband and wife that live together with peace and harmony, the Shekhinah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells between them. So here also, when Hashem talks in the Torah about, like in his book, Adam v'Chava, it's before Avraham Avinu, before the Jewish nation is created, right? So it's talking about this idea of creating that oneness. And it doesn't obviously happen overnight. Creating that sense of achdut, of oneness, it's something that it just doesn't happen under the chuppah. This is something that takes maybe a lifetime to achieve, but this is the goal, and it's, you know, so you see, it has a lot of ramification when it comes like to all facets of married life. This idea of achdut, of oneness, is referred to. You see, a lot of times, you know, some, you know, couples, right, when it comes, like, you know, to financial matters, especially in Persian families, this is a lot of times it's issues. Somebody was telling me, you know, that they think that, you know, a lot of singles don't want to get married because of they're afraid, like, you know, they want to, like, you know, prenuptial agreement, etc., because they don't know what are the intentions, what's going to happen, etc. So you see, you know, in the perfect marriage, it's one that they are really equal in everything,
right?
They have a joint, you know, checking account. Everything that they have is right. It's you know, it's a name of both of them. This is really the ultimate. But you see, lack of trust, lack of security in the relationship creates all kinds of obstacles, right, in that sense. So you see, in the old, back in Iran, the system that we had, and that was a Torah system, in that sense, was, in a lot of ways, it was ideal. You see, like in the Ketubah, that was the way it was done in Iran. It was really, it was a prenuptial, right? It was in all, you know, they use, you know, the Gemara says en ketubah belo meriva. It says always over the ketubah there was a fight. En ketubah belo. Why? Because the amount that they would write in the ketubah, right, that was a prenuptial. That was basically like from the very beginning. It would really take away a lot of tensions and mistrust, etc., things that now exist in marriages before it becomes secure, right? And also, unfortunately, the way it seems like it prevents some young people from getting married. I mean, I've been doing weddings for a long time, but you see, just recently I had a couple that got married, and they the father of the bride wanted to not to do it the Persian way. He didn't want to. He says, "I don't believe in this American way of having a, you know, set amount written in the ketubah." For your knowledge, you see, all the ketubot almost that we do here in America, all over, you know, it's about the Persians also. The amount that is written in the ketubah, in case, God forbid, this Duras Hamed, this marriage is going to dissolve. And you see, the ketubah is cashed in two ways. God forbid if the husband dies or they get divorced. So then it says that he's going to give her 200, or from his estate, she's going to get 200 silver coins. It's, when it comes out something like $10,000. Right. Now, why this is written? Because you see, in America you have a lot of, one of the things, you know, from the American Constitution is separation of church and state. In other words, you cannot, ketubah is not, it's not a legal document that you could go and cash it in the court. Here, you know, and, you know, we have, you know, it says we have to follow the law of the land. In America, it doesn't work like that. Like in Iran, it wasn't like this. In Iran, the ketubah had value. You could take the ketubah in the Persian court, right, court system, and to cash it. So that's why in Iran, you see, in Iran they would write, like, in millions of Wachta Rial Toman, whatever it was, I don't even know. Because you see, you know, in Iran we did not have this thing of separation of church and state. Right over there, says, okay, you're Jewish, so the ketubah was legal. The government enforced the ketubah. So see, but you see, that system, right, it seems like, you know, you see, you know, oh, you're getting married, it's so unromantic to talk about, God forbid, about the opposite. Right? But, you see, there is tension in the system. And it has, it, as I said, you know, I know of young people that don't want to get married because of that, because they're afraid. You see, the system of the ketubah, we have had meetings here in the Rabbanut also, you know, to try to suggest to couples, maybe to go back to the old system, because you see, it would save a lot of heartache and a lot of problems, right, if you would go back to the old system. And by the way, among religious couples that they do believe in the ketubah, and they believe in, like, you know, what the ketubah says, and it's not, and they don't care about separation of church and state, like, you know, if you have religious couples that, you know, if they have disputes, everything goes to the Beit Din, to the Jewish court system. So then, you know, they do write the ketubah, they write not a standard amount. They negotiate and they write an amount there that it's fair and just. And even, you know, I personally, when people ask me, I tell them, look, I'm not against fair prenuptial agreements. It has to be fair. It has to make sense. So there are some, like, you know, some of them, like, you know, they're gradual, like, you know, it says, like, you know, first year, second year, third year, right? After 5 years, 10 years, they become fully partners in everything. There are certain, you know, type of, you know, prenuptial that makes sense. But you see, in the ideal sense, what the Torah has in mind, it's like this oneness, it's in everything. This oneness, it's also, you know, really, you know, all what they have and they don't have, everything, it's there together, right? And I know some very successful marriages that what the husband does is, like, you know, he just, you know, he says, you know, brings his paycheck, gives it to his wife, and he says, you decide what to do with it, right? I'm telling you, this is. Puts the responsibility on the woman, and you see, it's very peaceful, because, you know, she knows, you know, this is how much she makes, right? I mean, if somebody is a businessman, it also could be like, you know, the paycheck that brings home. But you see, this financial aspect of the whole relationship, it a lot of times it causes problems. So the Torah's idea is merging together, merging it's really literally in all, you know, whether it's the financial aspects or other things, it's considered, like, you know, to create then that oneness that Hashem, right, had in mind as a prototype of the very first marriage that took place in the history of humanity. And Hashem was the matchmaker. Very easy task, because, you know, there weren't too many alternatives, and there weren't any in-laws involved. So that was the ideal. That was the ideal. So you see, if we move on from that prototype, what the Torah tells us, it's very interesting that, you know, as we said, you know, Bereshit Genesis, it's really beginning of everything. And in Torah, we have different descriptions of marriages that took place. Right, we have Avraham Avinu's married life is discussed at length. Yitzhak Avinu and Yaakov Avinu, all the fathers, and as a matter of fact, also you see all of them. You see, it's very interesting. The Torah, when it starts, the story of Avraham Avinu, the founder of the Jewish nation, starts. Constantly, you have husband and wife. It's everything, it happens with this one unit of husband and wife. Hashem picks Avraham Avinu after already he's married with Sarah. This couple, when Hashem tells Avraham, Lech Lecha, it's Avraham and Sarah together. So the whole story, they're building together. As soon as Sarah Imenu passes on, so then everything is put on hold. Right? The Torah stops everything till Rivka comes into the picture. If you follow the story of the Torah, the storyline of the Torah, right, when Hashem picks Avraham and Sarah, it's beautiful. But the couple, it continues constantly. You have one of the matriarchs, it's there in the picture, one of the Imahot. Right? As soon as Sarah Imenu dies, isn't it? So everything stops. Right? Avraham Avinu buries Sarah Imenu, and then right away, immediately, the very next thing is Avraham is looking for a bride for Yitzchak. The Torah doesn't talk about anything else, right? It's a very, very strong message that, you know, everything is created by we are talking about Avot and Imahot. We have the fathers and we have the mothers, all constantly, right? And then you have, obviously, we have Yitzchak goes and marries, we're going to dwell in a little bit, Rivka, and then it's Yaakov Avinu and the Imahot that they create the Jewish nation. But you see, out of all these relationships that the Torah talks about, one that is really from the very the Torah doesn't tell us, like, you know, how Avraham and Sarah got married. The Torah doesn't tell us, right? Hashem picks Avraham already after he's married to Sarah. So you see, out of the marriages that the Torah in Bereshit, the Torah describes in Bereshit, the perfect marriage is which marriage? Yitzchak and Rivka. Right. We do read in the Torah about some disputes between Avraham and Sarah. It says Avraham Avinu got angry at Sarah over the story of Ishmael, if you recall. Right. We do see Yaakov Avinu getting angry at his beloved Rachel, right, when Rachel could not have children, right? Over there is the Torah says, it's very interesting over there when Rachel came to Yaakov and says, "Havali banim, give me children, otherwise I'm I'm dead, so to speak." So Yaakov gets angry, and what does he say? He says, "Hatachat Elokim, am I under God?" Right. So Rachel says, "No." Rachel tells him, "Look, when your mother could not have children, your father Yitzchak prayed for her. You should pray for me also." So on that, the Shulchan Kadosh says Yitzchak Avinu told Yaakov Avinu told Rachel. He said, "Hatachat Elokim," and he said, "Look," he says, "my parents lived in Israel, lived in Eretz Israel. They were under, so to speak, right, under Hashem. So over there, the tefillah would help. But here we are." Not in Eretz Yisrael. So my prayers here, because we're not in Eretz Yisrael, it's not really as effective as my father's, right? But you see, we do see over there that there was some kind of discord. We see that, you know, the relation that the Torah says that, you know, there was tension there. But it's very interesting that, you know, the one relationship that there is no record of any discord whatsoever, even though their circumstances were very, very ripe to have discord, it's between Yitzchak and Rivka. Right. Over there we know that Rivka was instrumental in kind of like, you know, deceiving her husband, right, sending Yaakov Avinu to get the blessings instead of Esav. Right. We know how we know how Rivka Imenu basically forced Yaakov. Yaakov Imenu didn't want to do this. Yaakov Imenu followed his mom's instructions just because of Kibud Avaim, respecting of the parents, right? And here, obviously Rivka had reasons for doing this, But you see here, she was instrumental in, like, you know, in this whole ordeal of sending Yaakov instead of Esav, etc., etc. But yet we do not find, and obviously later on, Yitzhak Avinu found out about all this. But, you know, we do not find any kind of anger, or any, there is no recording in the Torah whatsoever. There's but any discord in that relationship between Yitzhak and Rivka Avinu, and it's amazing. So one of the commentators says that the reason for that was that really that marriage, that the family life of Yitzchak and Rivka is the model that the Torah wants us to follow. That was the perfect marriage. That the perfect marriage that is written in the Torah. It's not Abraham and Sarah, or the love story between Yaakov and Rachel, that in love from the first sight, as we see. Mm-hmm. Even though there are a lot of misunderstandings that, you know, we will allude to it a little bit. But you see the marriage between Yitzchak and Rivka was, it's really the perfect relationship. And it's interesting that marriage was not it wasn't, they did not pick each other. It was, there was some there was a shatran involved, right? This was the relationship that was created through Eliezer, the third party. He is the one that picked, right? He is the one that picked Rivka for Yitzchak. And you see, and that really, it's very telling, because a lot of times, like you see, a lot of people, like, you know, they don't want to hear about, like, you know, blind dating, etc. But it's, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, a third party, and you see, that's why among, like, you know, in the yeshiva circles, like, you know, from the religious circles, it's usually, it's very uncommon for a couple that, you know, they just went on a date, like, you know, that they met each other. No, it's usually done through a shatran, a matchmaker, right? Like different parties that, you know, talk about, to think of it, and, you know, the parents are involved, etc. And because you see in the Torah, this is, because a lot of times when we go ourselves, like, you know, we don't have the proper judgment, because we have other factors, you know, playing a role. So here, this one, here that when Eliezer was involved here, even though, as I said, the circumstances were the most demanding of the other relationships, we do not find any discourse. It's interesting. The Torah tells us that after, you know, Eliezer picked Rivka, and obviously it wasn't a done deal yet, he brought. Right, the halacha requires that, you know, that husband and wife, they need to date before they get married, right? So after Eliezer brings Rivka to Yaakov's to Avraham Avinu's household, the Torah tells us, "Vayzi'eha Yitzchak ha'ohela Sara imo, vayikachet Rivka v'tehilo le'isha, vayehaveha vayinachem Yitzchak achare imo." It's very interesting. We have to see the pasuk. It says, "Vayzi'eha Yitzchak ha'ohela Sara imo, vayikach et Rivka," right? That he married. Kicha here, it's a lashon of marriage. "Vatilo le'isha," she became his wife, and then "Vayehaveha." This is something everybody knows, that ahava, the love, comes after marriage, right? After they got married, then they fell in love. That's what the Torah says, right? "Vayehaveha vayinachem Yitzchak achare imo." And the Torah, you know, twice in this pasuk, Yitzchak's mother is mentioned. It says, "Vayehaveha Yitzchak ha'ola Sara imo," and then "Vayikach et Rivka v'tehilo le'isha vayehaveha vayinachem Yitzchak achare imo," after his mother. And you see, the Mefarshim say that, you know, usually, a man, right, he wants to see in his wife a lot of qualities that his mother has. we are talking about like in a good way, when we are talking about a healthy relationship, right? There is, you see in the pasuk twice, it's talking about like, you know, that Yitzchak, right? So Rashi says, and I think, you know, that's a source of a lot of rivalries between mother-in-laws and brides, right? Because there is some kind of tension, there's some kind of competition, right? As in the Gemara says, if ever a donkey could climb up from a straight ladder, so a bride and mother-in-law also would get along, right? But there is, this is what the Talmud says, right? But you see, you have to realize, where does this tension come from, right? The Torah is very, as I said, twice in the Torah. It says, Vayideha Yitzchak ha'ola Sara imo, one reference to is that he brought Rivka to the, and his mother had passed away already. This is after Sara imenu had passed on. And then he says, Vayinachem Yitzchak achare imo, that Yitzchak was consoled, Vayinachem, achare imo, after his mother. So Rashi tells us, Rashi explains what the pasuk is saying. It says, "Vayveha ohela v'harei hi sara imo klomar v'naaset dugmat sara imo," that he saw that Rivka was similar. Dugma is like, you know, similar to his mother. Rashi kol zman she sara kayemet haya ner daluk merav Shabbat. He saw that, you know, the miracles that took place when his mom was alive, that the ner, that, you know, that the Shabbat candle that Sara imenu would be lit the whole week. He saw the same miracle repeating itself, and also uberacha metzuya beisa the anan kashur ala ohel. He saw that, you know, there was bracha in the dough that she would make challah, etc. Blessing there, and also Anan kashur ala ohel, there was like, you know, a cloud representing Shekhinah was above the tent. He saw the same miracles that, you know, when his mom was alive took place. They came back, right? Vayinachem, and then when the Torah says acharei imo derech eretz, right? It says kol zman sheimo shel adam kayemet karuchu etzla, right? Rashi tells us that, you know, while the mother-in-law is alive, still, like, you know, still a person has two ladies in his life. He has his mother and his wife. Okay? What?
Each mother. His mother or his mother?
No, you see, no. This is Rashi is talking to the brides, to women, that they should have said, there's no competition here. They complement each other, right? It says kol zman sheimo shel adam kayemet karuchu etzla umishemat meta hu mitnachem beishto. Then afterwards, it's just she becomes the only woman in his life, right? Obviously, it's different type of relationships, but you see, this is, you know, you see a lot of, when my wife made the chicken soup, I said, oh, this is like exactly the way my mother makes it, right? Even though maybe it's something chicken soup, something universal, right? But you see, this is, you know, this is what you have in mind. You have your mother, and that's why I think it's good when people are dating, maybe to see what kind of future mother-in-law, right? There is gonna, you know, because they do play very, very fundamental role in a marriage. Obviously, right? The Torah tells us, "Al ken ya'azov ishet avivim." In-laws, they have to let the couple live their life. Right? Actively, it's asur for them to be involved. Right? That's what the Torah says. Al ken ya'azov ishet avivim etimo. There has to be some kind of, like, in a distance, right, for them to be able to create that oneness, right? The Torah says, "Al ken ya'azov ishto v'davak v'ishto," in order to have the vekut, in order to to create that oneness between husband and wife, you need la'azov means to leave, right? There has to be distance. But you see that distance, which is, you know, smart in-laws, they have to know those boundaries and not to interfere, right? That's why, you know, it says under the chuppah we say that Hashem, please make this chatan and kala happy the way in the Adam and Chava were in Gan Eden, in paradise. There were no in-laws, that we know, right? The difference between in-laws and outlaws is that the outlaws are wanted. You go to the post office, right? They are wanted. So you see that this is a must. This is the basics for Shalom Bayit, is that the in-laws should not interfere, right? They cannot interfere. But you know, without them actively being involved, we have to realize that, you know, this is the, you know, for sure, both mother, it's on both sides, right? The characteristic of the parents, it's reflected on the child, right? And this is very, you know, you see, it's very interesting. It just says, the Maharal says a beautiful thing. It says, the Torah tells us, ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra'a min urav. Right? The pasuk in the Torah. Hashem, before the Mabul, before he brought the flood, says, yetzer lev ha'adam ra'a min urav. That means this yetzer hara is in the person, this evil inclination, from his youth. It doesn't say from birth. It doesn't say from Leda, from birth. Maharal says it's min urav. So Rav Hirsch explains, and he says that's also in the Ten Commandments we had last week. It says that you know, Hashem says there is some kind of, like, you know, Hashem poked avon avot al banim al shirir. It's in the Ten Commandments that you see that Hashem punishes the kids because of the fathers, because of the parents, and also brings, like, you know, kindness to thousands of generations because of the parents, right? And obviously the Torah is saying, like, you know, if the kids right, follow the bad ways of their parents, so they are also punished because of the parents. But you see here, there is a connection. There is a connection because the parents are the ones who bring up and they raise the children. So the situation at home is reflected in the kids. If there is a ra, if there is some kind of, like, you know, if there are negativities, it comes from the youth, from the upbringing, from home, right? Because this is what they have seen, and that puts a very heavy responsibility on the parents. We have to realize, right, to have, you know, good children. Stipler used to say it's 50% prayers and 50% the relationship between the parents. Right? If the kids see, it says Stipler is the formula. It's very simple. Says you want to have good children, aside from Jewish education, etc. Right? Stipler says 50% of having good children is prayers, tefillah, constantly to pray for the kids. And the other 50% is the caliber, the quality of the relationship between the parents. Because this is what they see, right? You see, Yitzchak Avinu expects to see in Rivka a character like his mother, because that's what he has seen, all those miracles. So when he saw the same, that's how, right, he decided to marry her. And then we see, right, that you had that the Torah tells us, the Torah testifies, right, the Torah puts its hallmark that there was ahava, there was love between this husband and wife.
Stipler
was Harav Kanievsky, Zichrono Livracha. His son now is Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Everybody goes to get blessing. I was blessed to get a blessing from the father and the son. I married in 1985. I went to the Stipler and I got a blessing from him. And then every time I go to Israel, I go to his son, to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Yes, in Bnei Brak. A very, very, very humble home that I don't think even Baranespat, our maids, would not live in such conditions. But it's good to go. If you go to Bnei Barak, if you go to Israel, go see their house. and he's one of the leaders of Torah Jewry world over. See, like, you know, what kind of... you go there, like, you know, to the bedroom, you see the whole kitchen, everything, right? So, anyway, so he says that that's one of the Stipler had two very famous sayings about family life. One was this, that, you know, you want to have good children, 50%, he said, it's prayers, 50% is the relationship between the parents, the love, respect, caring. And he had another famous thing that he said, over 90% of Shalom Bayit problems, he said over 90%, if I'm not mistaken, if it may be the most, I don't know the exact language, that, you know, if there is disharmony at home, it's because of Gava. It's because of, like, you know, feeling a big shot, right? You know, it's people korul takabur. So that's the reason. He says when you have, you know, he told couples, whenever you have a Shalom Bayit problem, pause. See, is it ja'ava, is it korul, is it because of arrogance or not? And he said, like, you know, for sure, he said the great majority, I think it's at 90%, it's because of arrogance and haughtiness and ja'ava. Anyway, so just, you know, since we're talking about the Torah models, so we spoke about oneness, that the Torah believes that it's not a partnership, that, you know, everybody has his own checking account and this and that. No, it's oneness. Whatever they make, whatever he makes, she makes, it really should be a joint account. They spend from that joint account, everything, whatever they own, it's together. It's not a partnership. It's not like, you know, one entity, right, taking over the other one, but it's merging together. And we see this notion of true love coming after marriage. The opposite of all the Hollywood models that we see, that, you know, first they fall in love and then they get married, right? The Torah tells us this: the perfect marriage in the Torah, love comes after. By, it's interesting, by Yaakov Avinu, you see it reversed. Yaakov Avinu, when he sees, it was love from the first sight, right? Yaakov Avinu sees Rachel, and he, you know, he falls in love with her, and he's willing to work for 7 years to marry her, right? So, but you see, on that love, you do have problems. You see that, you know, they had a fight. The Torah tells us that they had a fight. But you see, that also, this is what I wanted to allude to, that if you have to realize that, you know, even by Yaakov Avinu, that love is not what we imagine as, like, you know, the loves that, you know, the Hollywood type of loves. Because the Torah says, "Vayehu be'enav kiyamim achadim." It says 7 years were to him, like, you know, like a few days. And you see, if there had been infatuation, it would have been 7 centuries. Right. And why seven? Why 7 years? So the Mefarshim explained that Yaakov Avinu, before he met Rachel, he was already a prophet. But we know Hashem spoke to him before that. And he knew that he has to bring Klal Yisrael, that he has the 12 tribes are going to come out of him, right? And those 12 tribes were supposed to come from. You should know, Yaakov Avinu didn't have any plans to marry 4 wives. Right? Yaakov Avinu was forced into that. The same way that Avraham Avinu didn't want to marry, you know. Avraham Avinu also, Sarah was the one, right? Solomon, he was the one that forced literally Avraham Avinu to marry Hagar. And unfortunately then we had all these cousins, the Arabs, from that marriage. And by the way, there you see also, by the way, you see that Judaism is from the mother, because Avraham Avinu has 2 wives. Avraham Avinu, the same way he's our father, he's the father of the Arabs. Right, from the same father, just the mothers are different. Right? Hagar versus Sarah. But you should know that, you know, in Torah's view, the same way there is one God, the same way there is one wife. that, you know, this Kabbalistically goes very deep. I'm not going to go into it, right? Or to the extent I know. Right. Mm-hmm. But you see, so how come, if that's the case, so how come Avram even had two wives? So, Avram was a good husband. His wife wanted him, forced him, and she was the one that forced him to take Hagar. The same is true about Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu just, you know, his intention was to marry just Rachel, right? But you see, then we know the whole story with Lavan, that he sent Leah instead of Rachel to the chuppah, and then Rachel and Leah, they basically they pushed Yaakov Avinu to marry Zilpah and Bilhah, right? But you see, Yaakov Avinu's, but really the Akeret HaBayit was Rachel Imenu. Just, I mentioned some teachings of Kabbalah here. Let me conclude with this, that you see this relationship between Yaakov and his wives, it's very symbolic and it's very deep. It's basically, you know, that in Kisa Kavod, in Hashem's throne, so to speak, there are four sides to it. One side, it's the shape of a human being, that the human being there is Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu's image is in Kisa Kavod. So the Mekubalim tell us that the relationship that we have with Hashem, it's very deeply connected to Yaakov and his four wives. Right? Hashem relates to us, Hashem the Creator, relates to us in that the relationship of Yaakov Avinu and his four wives, and the four wives actually represent four different levels of spirituality of the Jewish nation. If Yaakov Avinu, just to simplify a very deep Kabbalistic concept, if Yaakov Avinu would have married only Rachel, so then when we are beautiful and good, right, we would have been Hashem's chosen people. But if we are like Leah, that Leah, the Torah tells us that Leah was not pretty. Right? That's what the Torah says. Rachel Imenu was pretty, etc. But if Yaakov Avinu would have married just Rachel, right, so then when the Jews are not good, Hashem would have deserted us. But the fact that, you know, Yaakov Avinu has Rachel, right, Rachel, Leah, Zilpah, and Bilhah, this is what guarantees that Hashem would never forsake the Jewish nation. Right? Whether we are good and, you know, we follow Hashem's rules, etc., the mitzvot, we are like Rachel, we have a connection to Hashem, and also if we are Leah, and Leah is the exact opposite, still we are connected, right? That this connection, that what we have with Hashem, is really eternal, right? You know, and Hashem would never forsake us, no matter what. The Tanna of Eliyahu says that Hashem is Sameach b'chelko. Sameach b'chelko means that he's happy in his lot. In other words, this is, he's stuck with us, right? He can't change that. This is something that we are in this relationship, right, for good, right? So this is reflected in that relationship between Yaakov Avinu and the Arba, the Imahot. So, but you see, just to go back on what we started the discussion, here we have to realize that that Yaakov Avinu, right, unlike Yitzchak Avinu, there was discord in that relationship because that Ahava was premature. That Ahava, the Torah tells us that, you know, from first sight, Yaakov Avinu loved Rachel, which wasn't really that mature love that came afterwards. That caused, right, trouble later on in the relationship. But, you know, the one that, you know, that the prototype that we see that was the perfect marriage was between Yitzchak Avinu and Rivka, which the Torah teaches us beyond any doubt very clearly, right, that, you know, the true love comes after marriage if that oneness is in mind, that, you know, that marriage, it's like, you know, merging together. And we all know the famous story of Rav Aryeh Levin, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, right? Actually, there are two stories about him, right, about marriage. One is like, you know, that, you know, before when they lived together, I don't know, 70 years, I don't know. So when they were older, like, you know, his wife, he had to take his wife to a doctor, and when they go to the doctor, he tells the doctor, my wife's right foot hurts us, right? Ha-regel shel ishti ko'evet lanu. That's what he said, right? So this is really the ultimate of what the Torah says, right? What the Torah says, like, lebasar echad, you become that oneness. And the second story is that, you know, after his wife passed on, once, you know, he took a cab, a monit, and the cab driver asked him, "Efa bayit shelcha?" Right, where is your house? So he said, "Endi bayit." He said, "What do you mean?" He says, "My wife passed on. My wife passed away. Endi bayit. House is bayit. His wife is his bayit." So he says, "If I tagar, if I nigar, where do I live? This is the address. But bayit, I don't have bayit anymore. Bayit is finished, right?" So this is, you know, Rabbi Arya Levin, and it's and you see, and he told, you know, he used to tell his Talmidim that, you know, that this oneness, it takes a lifetime of really commitment to each other to get there, right? I heard that not too long ago, and I've been repeating it numerous times under the chuppah, that, you know, when we say Hayat Mekudeshet Li, right, you are sanctified to me. Li has two letters, Lamed and Yud. Lamed being the tallest Hebrew letter, Yud is the smallest. And more than anything, a Jewish marriage is about being committed to each other. Being committed to each other with the highs and lows of life. And, you know, I said it over that, you know, when a couple of years ago I was in somebody's house for Slichot, and, you know, they have been, it's a couple, they have been, it turned out that, you know, it was already also their 40th or 50th anniversary, I don't remember. So it's a certain doctor that lives in Beverly Hills, right? So he said, it is a beautiful thing, he said, when we got back, he said, I went to medical school in Iran, and, you know, before the revolution I was doing very well in Iran, and then, you know, we had to leave everything, you know, penniless. We left Iran and came back, and we had to start from scratch. So we had a lot of highs and lows in life. So he said, the night of our wedding, they put us on chairs, and they picked us up and down. So he says, this was very symbolic, right? You know, you're going to be together, you're going to be up and down in life. But see, these ups and downs, that commitment really brings to that ahava, love that comes after marriage. It's forged through that commitment. And being with each other, hopefully should be always lamed and the highs, but in life, right, like nature has highs and lows. It's very interesting also that, you know, the date that we write in the Ketubah, right, it's lunar, like, you know, the Hebrew month, and, you know, the moon also has ups and downs. You see, the moon, sometimes you have the full moon. A lot of people, they try to put the date of their marriage the first half of the month, preferably, right? Because then the moon is going towards completion. But you see, whether it's going through completion or becoming smaller, bigger, and sometimes even disappears, but then the good news is that then it reappears, right? The same thing is really, they say, the love between husband and wife. It doesn't mean that it's a constant thing. There are ups and lows in relationships also. But you see, we have to have that commitment with Zot Hashem to be devoted to creating that oneness, which is achieved through, you know, through proper expectations in marriage, that it should be based on giving ahava, which is have. And then someday, who knows, because also it's like, you know, it should never be any pain, but, you know, it's like, you know, my wife's foot
hurts us,
right? Anyway, fine, we'll continue next week with Zohar. Sure.
Rabbi,
yes?
I wanted to say something about Zohar Shalom. היושב-ראש, קצת מדבר לפניה.